Hey, friends. Welcome to another episode of the Strickland Podcast Network's mail.bag. I'm your host, Jeremy Cohen, and joined with me, as always, is my good friend, my mortal enemy, and my favorite lover, Schwinny Poo. Schwin, how are you?
I'm good. I, you know, just watching our Lakers play the Mavericks, so, you know, could be worse. Could be worse.
I don't know, just rooting for the Mavericks. Well, they're down so many players, as is, especially Luka. But it's a shame that this couldn't... I mean, this was last year's Mavericks team, and then they got better. But with the pick and everything...
It also sucks because, Kidd is the coach. So it feels like they're probably... I don't know, they're like 14 and 13. I really think they can go off the rails. Kind of like us. Kind of like the Knicks. Oh. They could do it. I believe in them.
Well, I'm glad that you brought it back to the Knicks because we've got a lot of things to discuss with this team. A lot of great questions and whatnot on Discord. So,
yes. A lot of great questions, a lot of interesting questions.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into it. So, first, we've got AJ in VA. Who do we think will be the first trade domino to fall? Is everyone waiting for Morey? I kind of feel like it's going to be something minor. Like, it's not going to be this huge deal. I just don't see how... I don't understand what Philly's path is to getting a top 25 player because of the market, because of who's available. I think the play-in tournament has gotten to the point where it's really hard for teams to just kind of give in, because why do that when they can make a push and have something to play for? Unless you're so far out of it that you might as well do it. Like Portland, maybe they have a change of heart and they realize Dame is not the player they want to keep building around. But that's also a decision you could make much more easily in the offseason when you don't have to worry about contracts, when as much, you know, midseason deals are tricky. So I kind of feel like it's going to be something anticlimactic, like, I don't know, like a Bagley for Diallo type trade. It was like, all right, no one's going to win that one, but... Like, we've started. Trade market's here. Hooray. But other than that, I don't think it's going to be Philly, because I think if he's dragged it out this long, he'll do it longer.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people were like, oh, like, I think, what was it, Woj last week had that random tweet about Ben Simmons, and people were like, oh, man, like, something's lined up. And I was like, I don't really think anything's lined up. Seems like Philly still trying to create a market, which is... You know, then there was the Shams report this week that, oh, the Knicks and, like, the Lakers. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure they're real. Like, I'm sure there's interest in Ben Simmons. I'm not sure that interest goes far beyond letting them know that you're interested. Yeah, as far as, like, I'm assuming his question is, like, is there a serious trade domino that I'm not sure who that first domino will be. I do think like there could be a lot more movement in the player in trading than people anticipate, just because free agency is basically dead now. So teams know that their best vehicle for acquiring players is through trades, really. And you have to be active, and you've got to be probably a bit more willing to shake things up than teams have been in the past. Like, I know a lot of those reports sound insane. Like, the one, what was it, Begley talked about how, or he reported that the Mavericks had tried to engage Brooklyn on a trade for Kyrie, and then there's stuff about Russell Westbrook floating out there. And, like, you know, trade talks happen, so it's like, you know, it could just be as simple as Dallas calling Brooklyn and just being like, hey, like, do you have any interest in trading Kyrie Irving? And, like, would Kristaps Porzingis interest you? And, like, it doesn't need to be some real serious down the line. Like, they've really worked through the nuts and bolts of it. But, I mean, things like that don't get reported. Like, it's easy to say that's bullshit and kind of just, like, leave it at that. But I don't know. There's so much floating around out there. I know Indiana's owner came out today and suggested they're totally not going to trade anybody. I'm willing to call bullshit on that. We'll see how that ends up. You know, I think something like not a major domino, but I feel like something like Cam Reddish getting traded could definitely be a first domino to activity. Obviously not the biggest name on the market, but look, we've been hearing now for like over a year that they'll totally trade Cam Reddish for a first round pick. Like, they'll do it, you know? Like, if anybody meets their price, they'll do it. They don't want to pay Cam Reddish. They've already paid, you know, they paid what, Herter, they gave Capella an extension, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
They paid
Trey. They have to pay DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah. And that's another guy that was floated in that same rumor is like, hey, you know, maybe they would be willing to listen to trade offers for him. I don't know. Atlanta just feels like more so than the Knicks, because I know the Knicks paid guys, but it's a little bit different. They don't have extensions on the books that are looming, really. Like, Randall's is the only one. Other than that, the only extension that's looming is RJ, which wouldn't kick in until 2023, 24. And at that point, you're probably still just looking at, what, Randall, RJ, and maybe Fournier, if he's still here, as your major contracts on your books. Like, there's nothing on their books right now that you would say on the pipeline for, like, major money at that point in time anyway. Atlanta's different. They've already paid their guys. They're locked in. They probably are in a position where they need to start moving furniture, consolidating. And look, they're off to a... It's funny, like, looking around the league, the Knicks are definitely disappointing, but there are a lot of disappointing teams, and Atlanta's among them. You know, I thought they'd be a lot better than they have been, but I did think it was a possibility that, like, you've got too many guys. They just have too many guys, and I do think they have too many guys. Like, Okongwu isn't even fucking playing yet, and he was the sixth pick, or whatever the fuck he was.
He was the sixth pick, yeah.
Yeah, he was the sixth pick a year ago, and, you know, they're not even playing him yet because he's just rehabbing an injury. So I don't know who, or, like, I don't know what, but if I was going to guess a team, I would guess Atlanta.
Well, the other thing, too, and you're right. I mean, Bogdanovich is also another guy who they paid. They gave him a lot of money. They even gave him a trade kicker, if I recall. And they've got Gallinari on a non-guaranteed contract for, not this season, well, this season, but also next year.
But they probably guarantee it for next year, right? Because, like...
Well, so that's the funny thing about it, right? Like, if we're talking about the Hawks, like we are, another team that's willing to spend, right? Like the Clippers or even the Knicks, because it's not about, like, Dolan's not frugal. He just wants to spend on the right team. I'm looking at Atlanta's payroll.
A lot of growth from Dolan there.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. So Atlanta has 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys under contract, if you guarantee Gallinari, for $150 million. For context, I mean, the tax line is probably going to be 142, 143, something along there. So
that's like what, like a Dellen Wright cap dump away almost?
Well, Dellen Wright's off the books after this year. But the point being is, like, if they wanted to function as a team that just didn't care about money, they could guarantee Gallinari and use him as salary filler along with, you know, Cam Reddish, and try to then be in the conversation for, like, who is a not great but very good player we could get. You know, I mean, they probably need a wing that can help them, because at this point, I don't really know how often you can trust DeAndre Hunter. Like, he's the type of player who, when healthy, can just be a really good performer, but I don't think his mid-range is going to be the same.
We don't even know what he is, really. Like, he played, like, what, like 30 games last year? And I know he played, what, the first round of the playoffs? But then he got hurt again, didn't he?
He did. He got hurt in the second round. And that's the thing. It's like, I think that DeAndre Hunter, without his mid-range game, which was on fire last year, we're seeing with
especially Randall, against the Knicks.
Exactly. Yes. You can see there's a good player in there, but what his end goal is, I don't really know. I mean, it also helps the Hawks if they want to keep him long-term, because with the injuries, they could probably get a better deal. But even still, if you pay him, you're, like, let's say they pay him $18 million, $15 million. Add that to the 2023 salary that they have, and it's still getting up there. So they've got to be, they're one of the teams that also, like the Knicks, has to consolidate, but it's very different because they can't consolidate it. Like, the right star that works for them doesn't exist in my mind, right? Like, they need...
Does Ingram exist? Well, we're going to get to Ingram later.
Well, yeah, all right, but we'll keep it for now. But yeah, so maybe the first domino is something like
I think the Pelican stuff is real, because, like, here's the thing with the Pelicans too, is, like, who the fuck knows what they think? Because, look, I mean, whatever you want to say about David Griffin, it's not his fault that Zion just doesn't give a shit and is fat right now. I don't know how you can blame that on David Griffin, because there's a certain modicum of just like self, like your own professional responsibility needs to kick in. And if you're a professional athlete, the basic thing that you have to do, just like the one basic thing you have to do, is just be in shape. That's it. Like everything else, yeah, you have an excuse and there's reasons, but you got to be in shape. He's not in shape. I don't put that on him. Also, like this entire season's just been, it's fun to make fun of them and like have a good chuckle about it. But like, he can't predict a lot of that stuff, right? Like, I mean, David just had so many injuries. Ingram has missed time. Zion obviously hasn't played it all yet. There's somebody else. They've had a bunch of fucking injuries, right? It's been like random skeleton squad stuff going on there. I think Kyra Lewis got hurt too. Not that he's been amazing or anything, but
he's out for the year.
Yeah, he's out for the year. Like they just have a bunch of shit going on, and like it would not surprise me if at some point they're just like, look, like we've got to just scale this thing back because we don't know what the hell is going on with Zion, which is another entire like wild card in itself, right? Like, what if they're just like, yeah, actually Zion has no interest in being here and we probably need to get rid of him. And we don't trust him because he's 7,000 pounds overweight. Like these are all reasonable, feasible things they could think. I think they're a complete wild card. They can go so many ways because there's also a possibility they're like, you know what? We got to show these guys like we want to win. Like we're just going to go for it right now. I know there was a rumor today that they talked to the Sixers about Ben Simmons. I think I'm willing to call bullshit on that. But yeah, I mean that it's all there, right? Like they can go any way. There's so many ways they can go. So I don't know. Like them and the Hawks, they just see and the Kings. Like those are the three teams where I just feel like they need to make some move, and there's some like tension in all of those places to a certain degree. Like the Knicks have tension, but I think the Knicks tension is a little bit different to me. Like I don't know, maybe I'm just being a homer, but like I don't sense it. Like I don't think Leon Rose's job is hanging in the balance. And I know people will think like, how the fuck can Atlanta's GM's job be hanging in the balance? Because they're about to be they paid all this money to be a certain level of good. And this is not just like, oh well, the Knicks paid Fournier, they paid Kemba. It's like, no, but like you mentioned, they're going to be over the fucking luxury tax line next year, probably, if they guarantee Gallinari. So it's a different level of commitment they've made. And it's great they made the conference finals last year. But the point is that the conference finals were supposed to be, okay, we made the conference finals, now this is a platform to continue being good. Like, this is not like, oh, like the Knicks made the one seed, and now they're maybe going to be a play-in team or miss the play-in cutoff. Like, it's a lot bigger of a deal to go from a conference finalist to, like, are we sure we're even going to win a playoff series? And the money at stake, and also just like the timeline, because this is kind of like the point in their build where you would make a big move. So in that sense, I think there's pressure to get it done right now and within this year. That doesn't mean that they win a championship this year or even compete this year, but I think they do have the pressure to make a big move this year. I think the Pelicans, obviously there's all kinds of reasons there's pressure. The fact that David Griffin's job is probably in the balance, which maybe might mean, you know, that he's not actually allowed to do anything. And then the Kings are the Kings. Like, who's their Monty McNair? He actually hasn't done anything, really, since he's gotten in there. Like, he hasn't made any big move. The biggest move he made was to not match on the Bogdanovich offer sheet, and then, I guess, bring back Rashawn Holmes. That's it. So it feels like, you know, you've been there for a year about now. Might be time to make a big move with a lot of the things going on with them. So those are the three teams. I feel like, I guess that's a cop out, but if I was looking at three teams or looking at a few teams as candidates for who could make that move, I think it would be those three.
Yeah. And I do think the one thing for Atlanta's benefit is that they don't have to trade Cam Reddish this season. They can do it next year. They don't have to make this big push for a player that might complete them, because Travis Schlenk is getting a contract extension, because Nate McMillan is getting a contract extension. Or, I mean, they've already received it. Trae Young is getting paid. John Collins is getting paid. Like, the nice thing for them is that they have a margin of error where, like, okay, this isn't our year. That really sucks, but we're still in prime position to do something. But I'm with you with New Orleans. They could go a number of different ways. The fact that David Griffin's job is maybe more in the kind of in the balance of what's going on might be a problem for them. But I don't envy the fact that they have to deal with Zion really this offseason, because that's when he's first eligible for a max contract.
And if you don't offer it, then...
Right. So if you don't offer it, then Zion's going to be like, okay, I'll just hit the open market. And I'm sure some team is going to be willing to take a chance on me. And, you know, even if that team is like, we figure the Pelicans are just going to match, then you're looking at a situation where the Pelicans either lock into a player for 4 years on a max contract who, you know, will have missed what will probably be the majority of his rookie scale contract, worked for a guy like Joel Embiid, but it's scary what Zion's going through, and the fact that his body is just, you know, I understand that he's not as heavy as it was reported, and that kind of like Melo back in the day where the warm-up gear that he'd wear, or even just during the games, like it'd make him look fatter than he really is. But still, like even if you take that aside, there are serious issues with his lower body. And I do not want to be in the position that New Orleans is in, which they offer him a max contract that he'll take because of the risk that's involved, or they don't offer it and they risk alienating the best player they've drafted since... I guess, I mean, is it slanderous to say Chris Paul and not Anthony Davis? I guess, no.
No,
I'll say it. But for the sake of it, I'll say Anthony Davis. That's just, I don't envy them. But at the same time, you know, Brandon Ingram moving him with 3.5 years left, I don't see it really happening. Valanciunas, they just traded for, but hey, he's 29 years old. At what point do they say like, okay, like this is a good move in theory, but if we're not going to have Zion and we're going to have Valanciunas just tearing it up, should we see if we can actually sell high on him? Because maybe they could get better value than from what they got him for. They did. They gave him a 2-year, $30 million extension. And so, it's paying off. I mean, they could flip him right now, and I'm sure that he'd have more value right now than he did when they acquired him this past offseason.
Is there any like weird restrictions about trading him?
No, he. It's not like Brogdon. He should be able to be dealt.
Okay.
Brogdon can't be moved until April, so that's obviously later on. But yeah, and I hate to give credit to David Griffin because I still feel like everything that is good that has happened with him has just fallen into his lap. But the Josh Hart contract is phenomenal. Like just the way that they created it, where it's a non-guarantee in a second year and a player option, or it's like a mutual option in the third. It's just really fascinating, and it hasn't been done before, so that was very creative. But yeah, you know, I mean, other than that, they're probably just, I mean, they're going to be a tanking team, and I don't even know if they're going to sell off the pieces, because if they do, then Zion's gonna be like, well, hello, I know I was injured, but you still can't wait for me, what's the deal? So they feel like a team where in the offseason they reassess where Zion's at, they see where their pick is, the player that they're drafting. Like if they got Chet, would they really keep Valanciunas, or would they trade him and get, I don't know, like a legitimate point guard? Because I still don't think Devontae Graham is going to be more of an answer for them. There are a lot of different directions they could go. I just don't. That's why I'm skeptical that a lot of things might happen this year because of the lack of free agency, because of the fact that there's the play-in tournament. It just feels like, unless it's a team like the Kings, and I'm with you there, where oftentimes each regime makes a big move and the Kings haven't done anything other than, as you said, letting Bogdanovich go and bringing Holmes back, which was kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, they're not big moves in the grand scheme of things.
Right. So, but I'm sure we'll...
Well, the Bogdanovich move is a big move, but it's like a move where you did nothing, which actually just amplifies the pressure probably, because he looked pretty good last year in Atlanta, and then you guys sucked and you continue to suck, so...
Yeah. And you did nothing, and you got rewarded for it by Woj, which was so ridiculous. Like, oh, you know, great move by Monty McNair in his first time as GM, not caving in and giving a contract. Like, what are you talking about? That's you whatever. All right, let's move on. We got a question from Mikey Cooks. Who wins in a slap boxing fight, Robin Lundberg or Tyrese? I hate that I am giving Tyrese a victory here, but I just have to go with Tyrese. You know, listen, he's younger.
He's taller. I don't know how tall Lundberg is, but I think Tyrese is like 6 foot something.
Probably. I don't know. the way Tyrese tweets, he carries himself as if he's tall.
Really? He that tweets like such a dweeb. He
That's actually like a good point. Like no, he tweets 5'4". Like a very small man sometimes. we can say that as below That's average height men. Yeah. Yeah, I just can't give Lundberg credit. I feel like Lundberg would just be talking about the Knicks the entire time.
Yeah, and look, then look, Tyrese we're allowed just... to talk shit about the Knicks. Robert Lundberg isn't.
No.
That's the answer. Good job, Tyrese. You won something.
Congrats. All right. Next, we got a question from Vivek. He says, why is Tibbs refusing to incorporate any weak side or off-ball movement in his offense? I could give you a grandiose answer because I'm just that brilliant with my X's and O's, but I'm actually just going to turn it to you and let you answer this one.
I don't know. Okay. I wish I had an answer. I don't know why, because it's actually really frustrating to watch it. We look every night like I actually am stunned. I think we're like still average in offensive rating or something. I got to check this real quick, but I think we're still average in offensive rating. And I honestly swear every night I watch this and I'm like, we look like the worst offensive team in the entire history of basketball right now. And, you know, maybe that's an example of how fans lose perspective. But, all right, looking at it right now, the Knicks are... Oh, no, we've come down. We're all the way down now. 20 in offensive rating. So, I mean, look, we started off so hot this year in terms of that, and now you're all the way down to 20. Like, I don't even want to go look at the splits. I don't, because I bet over the last 10 games we're, like, the worst offensive basketball. Why does he not do it? I don't know. I wish I had a good answer because, you know, look, I'm not trying to give Evan Fournier a pass. He's been fucking awful this year. I thought Kemba was bad. I don't think these guys are like the entire issue with them isn't just that there's no movement and the coaching is a problem. And it's not all that. Like it's on them too. You know, Evan Fournier is also just missing wide open shots. Not even close. He's also not boxing out or attempting to get rebounds or playing defense or generally looking like he gives a single flying fuck. That's not about anything, but like, why does he not? I mean, if I was to say something, I would guess it's probably fair to say, one, he's not the most creative basketball mind in the history of basketball. But that being said, he is capable of like manufacturing a functional offense, and there are coaches who often can do more with less. Less talent is easier to manage sometimes. There's less expectation. Guys are more willing to buy into more streamlined roles. You know, a Reggie Bullock versus an Evan Fournier, right? These are realities. Alfred Payton, who probably didn't deserve to play any, definitely didn't deserve to start at all, versus a Kemba Walker, who has been a starter his entire career and has played basketball in a certain way. So, you know, these are all things you have to consider. I think Tibbs might be a guy who just does more with less offensive talent because it's easier for him to get buy-in. I don't know what to make of that. I would say this. I do think that the Knicks and Tibbs probably need an offensive coordinator. They probably need an assistant coach who is dedicated to doing offensive coordination. I don't know if Johnny Bryant has that capability. Maybe he does. Maybe Tibbs is just not empowering him to because Tibbs has his own ideas of how he wants to do shit. That would be disappointing. But the Knicks were trying to hire Chris Finch at the start of last season to their staff, presumably to be an offensive coordinator. So I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that they simply just don't have a guy they feel comfortable throwing the keys to, the proverbial keys to, offensively, as far as, you know, directing strategy and scheme and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know why he's chosen not to. I agree that it's a problem. And I also am not sure that it's a problem that is something he is going to be able to fix or any of the coaches that are on the staff are going to be able to fix simply based on this organization's decision-making prior to last season and what they tried to pursue on the coaching staff. So very long answer. I have no answer why. All I can tell you is I wish they would, and I wish they would get somebody who had a background in doing so.
Yeah, I think I saw something today where the Knicks are towards the very bottom, or you know, around there of cutting, and that just seems like a waste. Yeah, and it's true. I mean, and I'm sure we'll get into this more later, but a lot of it probably comes from the center position and the lack of offensive ability that they have at that spot,
and lack of screening they get from that spot.
Yeah,
I don't know. I actually looked this up the other day. I think I'm like increasingly convinced that NBA.com/stats is a hoax. Like, I don't think it's real. I don't think any. I think half of the some of the tracking data and the hustle stats. Like, I saw that the Knicks are I think they were like top 10 in screen assists, and they were like pretty high in box outs, and like I don't know. I don't know how these stats are calculated then, because there's no fucking way anybody can watch this team and be like, wow, that's a really good screening team. Or, yes, they do a really good job of boxing out. I have no idea how these things are calculated or what counts for any of them. Because there's no way you can have watched the Knicks this year and thought they were good at either of those things. I mean, as far as the offense goes, this is why I desperately wanted them to sign a big man that had a background of being good at screening. I had suggested Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard, I honestly haven't watched the Lakers at all. I'm assuming he sucks. So maybe that was the wrong guy. But like, they definitely needed to get a big that could screen, because there's so many moments where you can just see the lack of just like utter kind of, I mean, ball handlers get no separation.
They're ragdolls. When
we run pick and roll. And it's like, and it's not because they're not using the screens or that they can't penetrate. Like, Derrick Rose gets no separation. Do I believe that Derrick Rose has no idea how to use a screen? I don't. I believe he does. And it's very frustrating to watch him not be able to get separation. It's very frustrating to watch all our guards have to literally hold people's hands and kind of direct them to where they need to be to set a screen. And it's also frustrating to watch how many of our bigs roll with zero intensity or purpose. So yeah, I don't know. It's beyond me. I don't think it's very simple to say it's just Tibbs. I do think a lot of it is on Tibbs. But it's hard to run weak side stuff if you just don't have guys that'll screen. And you know, some of that is the coach has to get them to screen, and some of that is I'm positive that Kenny Payne has been telling Mitchell Robinson how to set screens forever. Nerlens Noel will never be able to set an effective screen in the game of basketball because he weighs about 6.5 pounds. And Taj Gibson is 79 years old. So, you know, these are your bigs. And yes, Steph Curry is great at screening. There are plenty of wings and guards who are good at screening. Quickly is a good screener, actually, on the Knicks. RJ Barrett is a willing screener. But,
you know, Deuce had a nice screen last night for that Knox.
Guys need to, you know, and it's not just about setting screens either. I'll say this. I've seen multiple design sets where RJ runs a cross screen for Randall to come through to the other side of the post and get the pass. Randall cuts with no purpose, so the defender just can, like, kind of walk through the screen and stick with Julius. So it's about cutting with purpose, too. And it's about doing everything that they're doing offensively. They're not doing it with purpose. And that can be coaching. That can be on the players. That can be fucking 7,000 things. It is a collective failure right now offensively. They're in a funk, and they need to stop depending on somebody catching fire to get them out of it. They need to get it together, and they need to work to it together. And Tibbs is definitely central to that in terms of getting guys to buy in. And I would say this part of getting guys to buy in is holding people accountable, and I don't think he's done a good job of that this year.
No. Yeah, I would say that the two bigs for the Knicks at the center position, not Taj because he's not ahead of them, they just remind me of children who have learned how to walk on stilts. Like, they can't, they just don't do a whole lot in terms of the physicality of it. So I'm with you on that in terms of getting someone who can at least feel like they're more imposing physically, at least. But all right, next we've got.
Yeah, like, I got to say this, like, Mitch put on all this weight, and I feel like he's less physically imposing at everything than he was before that. I mean, I was watching. I don't even watch. I just saw a highlight of like Jared Allen stuffing someone at the rim. And it was like, I don't remember a single time this year where Mitch met somebody at the rim and just stuffed them. And that was a thing he did routinely all the time. And I'm not talking about a guard in pick and roll and he trails and he finds them and he catches up. And I mean, like you're at the rim, you're waiting for them, and you meet them and you fucking stuff the shit out of them. I haven't seen that once from this year. Or at least not that I remember. I mean, maybe the last time I saw it was like when he fouled Pat Williams, and Pat Williams, you know, sucks. I'm sorry for his, you know, injury, but he got injured. He's out for the year now. That's honestly the last time I remember that. Like, I really don't remember him waiting in anticipation at the rim and just contesting somebody. And like, I don't know. It's actually kind of stunning. He's gotten worse as the season has gone along. Like, he's legitimately gotten worse. It's mind-boggling. I don't know. Watching him, it's like, I feel like a family member has betrayed me when I watch him this year. That's what I feel like. I've never been, I told Prez this, but like, I've never gone from so in on a player to so out within 2 months. As I did this year as I have in the last 2 months with Mitchell Robinson. Like, he's just been, it drives me crazy.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah,
for years, awful. I was ridiculed for my hatred of Mitchell Robinson, and now you see the light.